那可是用的金巴金巴的了啥心金巴的你那个说的啥心金巴去给金巴米去金巴送你为哪里去呢那啥心没金币过谢谢那个这里那金巴金巴是的是先来动为先把的动为这个银子比什么的了金巴来过的动为先把的那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那那 Good evening on this rather wet evening. So last week we started to look at the perfection of generosity, and we saw that there are three divisions: the generosity of material giving, generosity of giving the Dharma, and generosity of giving fearlessness. And amongst these three, we looked at the first one, the generosity of material giving. So just to remind ourselves, then, what is generosity? So generosity is the mind of giving. So generosity is defined as the mind of giving. And then we, in terms of our practice, in terms of our meditation practice, then we last week we mentioned again how our daily meditation should encompass the cultivation of the mind of bodhicitta. And then when one has given rise to the wish to attain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, and thereby lead all sentient beings to a state free of suffering, then one moves one's meditation onto the practices that one will engage in that day so as to bring this about. So this comes along with the motivation of, today I will ensure that everything I say, do and think is separated from any negative motivation, and I don't harm others at all. And moreover, whenever I have the opportunity to help others, I will do so, ensuring that I have a virtuous motivation and thereby guiding my actions and my speech to be of benefit to others. And within that context, then we go into reflecting on the practices of the six perfections.
We'll continue then tonight.
from the middle of page 236, with the second of the three divisions of the perfection of generosity, and that is the giving of Dharma, and thereafter we'll look at the giving of fearlessness. So we'll look at what they are, how to practice them, and what are the benefits of engaging in this practice, and the benefits in terms of for oneself as well as for others. The Buddha, of course, was the one who originally taught the six perfections, and the six perfections are presented in a specific order, with the perfection of generosity being first. And then the first of the six perfections, that of the perfection of generosity, has these three subdivisions, the subdivisions of material giving, giving of Dharma, and giving of fearlessness. And of these three, the first one was material giving. So if you're wondering what was the reason that the historical Buddha taught the perfection of generosity first, why was not one of the other perfections presented first? Well, the reason generosity was presented first is that all beings, whether humans or animals or any other kind of being, that we all need our material conditions. First and foremost, we need our material conditions to be comfortable, to be conducive, to be sufficient. We all require sufficient nutritious food to eat, somewhere safe and comfortable to live, and we need clothing to protect us from the elements. So we all have these basic needs. And those of us who have problems and difficulties in terms of these basic needs being met, then these difficulties are a result, and that result comes from a cause that we ourselves have created in the past. So therefore, through engaging in the practice of generosity, then one, first of all, helps others overcome these basic requirements, or fulfill these basic requirements of, for example, having sufficient food, clothing, and accommodation. And furthermore, for oneself, one is creating the causes so that in future lives, one has meets the required conditions with ease, and in one's future lives, one has comfortable and sufficient, the required conditions to engage in beneficial practices for others. And that's one reason. The second reason is that when one helps others, especially in this material way, it's something that we all can do, and through doing so, we create a good connection with others. Through helping others, we create a good connection with others. And bear in mind that this is in the context of the bodhisattva's practice of generosity. Then bodhisattvas want to form good relations with others, good connections with others. And in particular, so that they can guide them away from paths of suffering, paths of non-virtue, and lead them to paths of virtue, paths of happiness. So through helping others, through practicing generosity, and forming a good connection with them in this way, then the bodhisattva can also influence them in ways that they can accumulate virtue and turn away from non-virtue. So it's for these reasons that the Buddha presented the perfection of generosity first. We've just then heard why the Buddha presented generosity first amongst the six perfections. Then within generosity, we've heard that there are the three subdivisions, that of material giving, giving of Dharma, and giving of fearlessness. So amongst these three, the reason why material generosity was presented first is because, again, for all beings, ourselves and others, we first need to ensure that our material conditions are taken care of. And because if our material conditions aren't taken care of, our life is not going to be protected. We're not going to be able to sustain our own lives, let alone be of benefit to others. So therefore, material generosity is the first emphasis within this, the practice of generosity. Because through focusing first on material generosity, one for oneself creates the causes to ensure that one has suitable conditions in the future, and two, that others right now have good conditions. And this, and why this is so important in the context of a bodhisattva's practice, is if one's material conditions are not sufficient, one will not be able to engage in spiritual activities. This is because one has to have sufficient food to eat in some way, safe to live, etc. And similarly, others, those that one wants to benefit, they will not be able to engage in spiritual activities if they are struggling to get enough nutritious food to eat or to care for, to take care of those they are responsible for, etc. So therefore, first and foremost, one needs to ensure that one's material conditions are sufficient, as well as the material conditions of others. And moreover, remembering that we're in the context of the bodhisattva's practices, the bodhisattva who is primarily focused on the welfare of others will know that when beings are struggling to survive, then they may well engage in any activity necessary so as to survive, and they may discard any training they've received or teachings they've received on what is virtuous and what is non-virtuous so as to survive. And therefore, beings may well engage in non-virtuous activities or harmful activities to ensure that they have sufficient food to eat and somewhere safe to live. So therefore, the Bodhisattva engages first and foremost in these practices of material giving. And again, this was done so as to benefit others and ensure they can engage in spiritual practice and they don't engage in non-virtue, and so that the Bodhisattva is creating the causes that in their future rebirths they have sufficient material conditions so that their spiritual practice is not impeded. The text presents a wide number of illustrations of the results that come from engaging in spiritual practice, material giving. So, for example, the giving of food is presented that if one gives food in one's future lives, one will have sufficient nutritious food oneself. And likewise, if giving clothing, then one will have will not have problem getting the required clothing. And furthermore, through giving holy objects and giving texts and the like, one will encounter such conditions in the future. Or if one offers beautiful sound, then this in the text, this is presented that in the future, the ripening results will be that one has a melodious voice. So these are some of the illustrations that are given in the text. But basically, one material giving includes a vast array of objects that one can give. As we heard last week, that the practice of generosity is specifically referring not to, or the practice of generosity, including material giving, is specifically referring to the mind, the motivation. That is the primary focus. far less of a focus is on the substance that is being offered. So if one doesn't have much abundance, if one is impoverished, then one still can engage in the practice of generosity, including material generosity, material giving. So the texts give illustrations that even if, for example, if monks who are impoverished, they too can engage in the practice of material giving. So for example, if they have generated an appropriate motivation, then engaging in a spiritual dance, that is an act of generosity. And they would be making that offering to their teachers or the Buddhas and the like. Another could be the material offering in terms of giving sound. So a recitation of prayers and texts and the like. But this is, for this to be a practice of the perfection of generosity, then the motivation needs to be suitable. And the motivation is the key point. So if an act of generosity is done with a motivation so that one may be ensure that one doesn't fall into the lower realms but attain a good rebirth, then this act of generosity, the virtue that's created from this act of generosity, will ripen as a result of a rebirth, not in the lower realms. Or similarly, an act of generosity that is done with a motivation to be freed from all the sufferings of samsara and to attain the state of liberation, then that cause that has been created through this act of generosity will ripen in a similar way. In other words, it will ripen as the attainment of liberation. And then, of course, the third motivation is the motivation that by engaging in this act of generosity, may that virtue ensure that I attain the exalted state of Buddhahood, but with the sole intention of leading all sentient beings to the state of Buddhahood. And then that act of generosity becomes a cause that will contribute to the ripening of that result of Buddhahood. So this here is now being re-emphasized to remind us that motivation is crucial. Because if one engages in an act of giving, but without having generated such a motivation, then this is still an act of generosity, and virtue will be accumulated, but it will not ripen in one of those three ways. So, for example, if in those either of those three motivations previously, if one were to practice the material generosity and offer food, then the virtue created from offering food would ripen as either as the result of a good rebirth, or as liberation, or as enlightenment. However, if no motivation was generated, and generosity was and the generosity of giving food was performed, then virtue would still be created, but it wouldn't ripen in one of those ways. Rather, in a future life, one will have sufficient food to eat. So it would ripen in that kind of direct manner. So therefore, again, the emphasis here should be on our motivation. Now, turning our attention to giving Dharma. So giving Dharma then, again, based on a motivation of being of greatest benefit to others, then one engages in an act such as either teaching the Buddha Dharma, or giving an initiation, or giving an oral transmission. And then these would be illustrations of the giving of Dharma.
And then,
Then a further way that one can engage in the practice of giving Dharma is that when one has generated good motivation and accumulated virtue in some way or other, then when one comes to dedicating that virtue so that it ripens with a motivation that this virtue that I have accumulated may it ripen for all sentient beings, for the benefit of all sentient beings. And in this way, one is offering one's virtue to all sentient beings. And this is a practice of giving of Dharma. Another way that one can engage in giving of Dharma is when one encounters someone who is in a difficult situation, in particular if they're mentally unhappy or they're dispirited, they're depressed, they're feeling down. If we then spend some time with them, we try and be there for them, offer them some help, some guidance, depending what's appropriate. But we give of ourselves to them, and we do so with a motivation to try and help them both here in the short term as well as in the long term. Then this too is a giving of Dharma.
Why
would this be called a practice of giving? Is because if we think when a friend or someone who knows us approaches us and says, I'm not so happy, I need a friend to talk to, and if we then respond and say, oh, I don't have time, I have many things to do, and we push them away, this is coming from a motivation, this may well be coming from a selfish motivation, a motivation where one is taking one's time and keeping it for oneself, and not wanting to share of oneself, share one's time with others. Whereas if one rather responds in a generous way, responds in a way where one gives oneself and gives one's time to others, then this clearly is not a mind of miserliness, but this is a mind of giving to others. Then it's pertinent there. So just to be clear, then this type of generosity, this could be included within, if we think of the three types of generosity, then this would be included within the type that is the giving of Dharma.
Okay.
When one has the opportunity to engage in the practice of giving up Dharma, and particularly in the practice of giving up Dharma, one must be very aware of one's motivation and ensure that one's motivation is free from any form of selfishness. In particular, thinking of what one gets in return, such as a good reputation or praise from others or some kind of financial reward, some kind of recognition. So one should take good care of one's motivation and ensure one's motivation is separated from any form of self-interest. We will talk more about the third type of generosity later, the giving of fearlessness. But just to briefly say what that is, the third type of generosity, the giving of fearlessness, this is with a motivation of compassion and concern for others, one protects others whose life is in a desperate situation, who are at risk of imminent danger of dying. So in such a case, with a motivation of compassion, one protects them, one saves their life. So that is the giving of fearlessness. So now we've mentioned the three types of practice of generosity. So these can be distinct, but they can also be done together. So if we take as an illustration the offering of food to a suffering sentient being, so whether a human or an animal. So if one gives food to them with a good motivation, then that of course is the giving of material goods, because you're giving food, it's material goods, to another sentient being. And doing so with compassion, aware that the sentient being is suffering, that they require food to protect their life, and particularly if they are impoverished and they're struggling to sustain themselves, then through giving them food, one is also giving the generosity of fearlessness. So here, with one act of giving food, especially to a sentient being whose situation is really desperate, one is engaging in two of the three types of the practice of generosity. Then having made this practice generosity, so generated a motivation, given the food to the other sentient being, then afterwards, one's aware that one has created a tremendous amount of virtue, then dedicates that virtue to the welfare of all sentient beings, and dedicates it so that all sentient beings can meet the Buddha Dharma, they can attain liberation and enlightenment and the like. Then in this way, through such a dedication, one is also engaging in the practice of giving of Dharma. So this is an illustration how one act of giving, the giving of food, encompasses all three types of giving.
Chimba shenle penpa ane sosuki gari yungure sene sosuki shenle chue she di jeba la sosuki chue di shin kukuruwa nyam ko lalanda ko jang kukuruwa jesan sosuki sosuki penpa ta sosuki gang shinpa di mi shenle lap che di jimba tangi di sosuki ma jeba ane yane yandu di jedu ya ane nipo gongpen zho ya ta cheba yungure s ane di di Dini ki susu ki ma cheba nipo kwanye kwanye pyaya tu Dini ki dhibu di jewa chima yin na ya Da chuki to susu rana chuki to ya lupra chuki tu Namsang joko shing ya le la bu ta Namsang shing tu ya ta Ani nipo chera tu ya ta Ani cheba di yung gures Ani shen le na chue she che Chue she tu kundu di nyamlin che chu tu Ani nyamlin che ne chue nyamlin che tu Ani kundu yin na di che ya tu Ani chuki tu bi ba sha sha ya ta Ani nyamlin bu bang ta ta अने गम जैसा शिनो दू अने सोसुगी सोसुगी न्यूमों बा म्यावा से ता दुमा से या थबलम न्यामलें ची शिन कोरेस अने देने की चीज़ अने कौनसी इन्हें कहाँ न्यूमों बे से दुमा से या ता देने की न्यामलें ची दू अने कौनसी इन्हें डिग्री या ता जेवा चिमा इन्हें कौनसे याहो या देने इसा राशन नि� 최근에
When one engages in the practice of giving up Dhamma, whether it's through teaching or giving advice or initiations or oral transmissions, or one of the other ways that we've mentioned, then there are tremendous benefits for both oneself as well as for others, as well, and also there are benefits for this life as well as future lives. So if we take the illustration of maybe teaching, so the benefits for oneself now is that oneself in this life, is that in order to be able to teach something, one has to know it oneself. And not only must one know it, one must have some experience of it. So therefore, in order to teach something, one needs to come to know it well, and not just on an intellectual level, but on maybe an intuitive level, to have some experience of it. So therefore, in order to teach, one has to study and to practice. And therefore, through the process of preparation and teaching, then the topic becomes much stronger within oneself, has a greater impact on one's own mind. So that's a direct benefit in this life from engaging in the practice of giving up Dhamma. And then furthermore, for oneself, the benefits continue in future lives, and in future lives, it will be much easier to understand the Dhamma because of the power of these imprints. So in the future lives, one will come to meet the Dhamma and understand it that much more easily. So those are the benefits for oneself in this life and in future lives. And in terms of others, of course, the benefits for others in this life are quite clear. Through hearing the Dhamma, they are presented with the opportunity to engage in the practice of Dhamma, in other words, to meditate and cultivate these minds within them. But to be able to do that, they first have to hear the Dhamma, and they have to hear it repeatedly, and thereby they slowly can engage in the cultivation, the development of these minds within them. And doing that, then the imprints that they have gained will strengthen, and the virtuous minds will strengthen, the non-virtuous minds, the afflictive minds will weaken, problems will become reduced, and difficulties will lessen. So those are very clear benefits that will come in this life through someone receiving the generosity of Dhamma, and their benefits in the future lives are clear in that through receiving the teachings, merely just hearing teachings, imprints are gained, and these will have beneficial results in the future, let alone then, of course, the engaging in the cultivation or the meditation of on the Dhamma and strengthening those imprints, developing powerful virtuous minds, weakening non-virtuous minds. Then these, of course, carry through to their next lives, and those results are experienced through habituation in next lives. So therefore, this practice of giving up Dhamma has tremendous benefits for oneself as well as for others, for this life as well as future lives. In terms of generosity, though, there are occasions where one should refrain from practicing generosity, when it would be inappropriate to practice generosity. So if we now think maybe more in the context of material giving, so this would be in a case where if one was to give materially to someone who, through supporting them, they would engage in great non-virtue. So perhaps if one was sustaining beings, beings who were going out to kill and take others' lives, and wouldn't be able to do that if one didn't practice generosity towards them, then one should not practice generosity towards them, because through helping them, through aiding them in some way, they will engage in non-virtue. So in such cases, it is certainly appropriate to refrain from assisting them, refrain from practicing generosity towards them. This is the same also for the giving of Dharma. There are instances when one may be qualified to give Dharma, but it is inappropriate, it shouldn't be given. So that would be where someone says, is asking for a particular text or a teaching on a subject, but their motivation is particularly negative. Their motivation is they want to come to understand something so that they can criticize it, so that they can find fault in it. And because of that motivation, they would accumulate a tremendous amount of negativity. So to such people, one should not give a text or give a teaching to them, again, because it will be aiding their actions, which will lead to further, to future suffering.
And 가서 아니 신식이요 말봐. 제가 곧 타봐 있나? 코에 가지 아니 미망 없어요. 그냥 가지 되고 진짜 팬발은 여봐 체인 거. 제가 되네다 되네기. 대전간 지당 전간아 주주가 미문에 니제 삼제 전간아를 타는 집에 있나? 미지비지 마찬가지. 되네기 년아 여비기 미라 미지 안 전간아를 타답 집에 있나? 내가 죽지 못하고 되네다 되네기 고압으로 지치우나 아니
Another situation where one needs to use one's own wisdom and not engage in helping others would be, for example, if someone had been imprisoned for doing a number of crimes, and now they were in prison and they were asking for our help to have them released. So, I don't know, maybe help them break out, or maybe provide a character reference so they can be paroled. But if you know that this person's mind is still one of wanting to bring harm to others, then that person, by remaining imprisoned, would accumulate less non-virtue and wouldn't directly harm others. Then one should rather not help them, and they should rather remain incarcerated, because whilst they may not be happy being confined like that, they are at least being prevented from accumulating powerful negativities. So this is another illustration of where one needs to use one's own wisdom to determine when to help and when not to help.
So the
meaning of this and the previous examples is that one shouldn't be allow one's mind to be overcome by emotion. One needs to use one's intelligence and determine which is the best path to follow, the right path of action. Should one engage? Should one not engage? So one needs to use one's intelligence. And this is important because one may well have generated a powerful motivation to be of benefit to suffering beings in any way that one can. But sometimes one may be able to help others, but one isn't really helping others. And therefore one needs to use one's own intelligence.
So
near the bottom of page 236, there's an account here when Lama Atisha was asked by his disciples when they might be able to teach others, work for others' benefits, or perform the transference of consciousness. The first part of Lama Tisha's reply was, you may guide others once you have realized emptiness and developed clairvoyance.
So 담담 판마도 아지 녀비야 용구리 젠 제가 안 지셰베나야 콘도 셰기 뒤서 답아 메레 바체 판도 침보며 용구리 제가 옌뇌 야고 용하라 아니 뭐시 구고레스
And the reason for these two criteria being stipulated is firstly in terms of the need to have realized emptiness is that without having realized emptiness one's self-grasping is still very strong and therefore the resulting afflictions are very powerful such as for example pride the mind of pride in wanting to have many students and to be able to brag and show off to others about one's students so that mind of pride will be severely harmed or curtailed if one has realized emptiness. And then in terms of the need to develop clairvoyance, that if one does not have clairvoyance, one will have may have the motivation to be of benefit to others and engage in activities to be of benefit to others, but not knowing what their motivation is, not knowing what their disposition is, not knowing the mind of the student well, then one will end up making mistakes. And whilst one may be wanting to help, then one actually ends up harming. So therefore, clairvoyance is also required. Behind the words that we see here, there is more meaning to Lama Atisha's statement. Because Lama Atisha isn't saying, until you have realized emptiness and developed clairvoyance, do not teach the Dharma to others. That is not what's being said. There's more meaning to this. And that is, you need to be aware that when you teach the Dharma without the realization of emptiness or the attainment of clairvoyance and the attainment of clairvoyance, you will not your help to others will be very limited compared to what it otherwise would be. Moreover, take this then as first of all an awareness of your limitations. So in other words, to address your pride, and secondly, take this as inspiration to develop these qualities within you so that you can be of greatest benefit to others. So this is the meaning behind what Lama Atisha said.
Rangdun
Then the second answer from Lama Tsisha, so this would have been in answer to the question of when is it suitable to work for others' benefit. Lama Tsisha replied saying, you may work for the benefit for their benefits, once for your own benefit, there is no more left to do. Again, so the words literally are quite easy to understand, but there's much more meaning behind these words. So what Lama Tsisha is not saying is until you've overcome the self-cherishing mind, you shouldn't strive for the benefit of others, or you shouldn't work for the benefit of others. He's not saying that. Rather, what he's saying is that recognizing that the self-cherishing mind is overcome by the mind of great compassion, strive to develop the mind of great compassion. Before you develop this, when you engage in beneficial activities, when you have the opportunity to engage in beneficial activities for others, do so. But be aware that the benefit that will come from this will be greatly limited because your self-cherishing mind is still so strong. And it's still so strong because you haven't yet given rise to the mind of great compassion in a stable and powerful way. And so the fault of not having given rise to the mind of great compassion is that one's motivation is infused with the self-cherishing mind. So then one is very likely to be concerned or to be tempted by things such as fame and renown and reputation, as well as the arousal of pride, certainly having favoritism towards some and dislike towards others. So with one's motivation mixed with these very worldly minds, then one's motivation is certainly not one of the Mahayana, not one of the great vehicle. And therefore, the causes one's creating are not going to be powerful. They're not going to be directly related to the attainment of enlightenment for all sentient beings. So again, what is being the meaning behind this is, if you have the opportunity to help others even now as an ordinary being, do so. But strive to develop great compassion and thereby overcome the self-cherishing mind, because then your activities will be included within those of the Mahayana.
Then
in answer to the third question about the performing the transference of consciousness or poa, here Lama Tisha replied saying, you may perform the transference for the dead once you have entered the path of seeing. So this is again, it's quite clear. What the practice of poa or transference of consciousness is when a practitioner is able to transfer the consciousness of another being to the Pure Land of Tushita. But this is something that is not easy to do, and it can only be done by those who have very powerful realizations. It can't just be done by anyone. So therefore, Lama Tisha is saying, you need to attain the path of seeing in order to be able to actually project another being's consciousness to Tushita.
Nanya, Joe, Garson, or Sene, Dada, Nimi, do so, Pozo, Timby, do my Niru, Timby, do his or that Diana, on the Dujotelia, Nimi, do this, says that Nima said, do Nima said, and Yomo Nima said, and the Nimi do this. He goes to Dama, Singu, Jimmy, Toto, Chesian, Sosoke, Chichi, Singu, Toto, Soso, Yamne, Shara, Machevache, Juan. She
这个前列就这个判断这个多少钱呢现在判断这个多少钱呢那么其实 also said, and we have a larger quote at the top of page 237, so this also requires some explanation. So the first part is, this degenerate time is no time for boasting, it is a time for arousing determination. So the time that we're living in is called a degenerate time, and in such a time, people can tend to be much more afflicted. So they may think they have a good understanding, but not have one, or they know they don't have a good understanding, but due to their afflictions, they assert that they do understand. They pretend that they do understand, and that this may well come about from a motivation of being overly enthusiastic to be of benefit to others, but they don't yet actually have the knowledge and experience to do so. So here Lama Tisha is encouraging his students to generate the mind of determination or joyous effort. Generate this mind and make effort in your studies and your meditation so as to develop the genuine qualities where you can actually be of benefit to others. So the meaning here is Lama Tisha is saying to all these students that be aware of being either overcome by pride or being overly enthusiastic to be of benefit to others before you are ready. So therefore, make effort in cultivating these qualities within yourself. Don't exaggerate the qualities that you have. Don't pretend they're greater than they are. Rather, make effort in developing these qualities so that they actually become great. And then your activities to be of benefit to others will be greatly beneficial. And similarly, the next part of the quotation, this is no time for holding high positions, it is a time for keeping to a humble place. So this too is about guarding your mind against pride. Because if you exaggerate the qualities that you have, and you pretend to know things that you don't know, and you pretend to have experience that you don't have, then people will approach you asking for teachings, asking for advice, and your pride will make it very difficult for you to back away and say, actually, I don't know this, or actually, I don't have experience of this. And you will end up giving advice when you're not qualified to do so. And that advice will certainly not be of benefit to the recipient, and they may well see through the facade that you are presenting to them. So be very aware of this danger of pride. These are degenerate times, and it's much more likely that we will be overcome by this influence, this affliction of pride. So therefore, guard yourself against pride, and rather make effort in developing the qualities genuinely within yourself. The next part here is, this is no time for having servants and companions. It is a time for living in solitude. So this word that we have translated here as disciples, it could include students, but it's more those who are around oneself. So if it was the specific situation of a teacher and then the monks living around the teacher, they may well be his students, so then you could say disciples. But the word is broader than that. It applies in other situations as well. So we rather say companions here. But the meaning, again, is that be aware of the arisal of pride. Be aware of the harm that pride can come. Because it's all too easy to generate pride in having servants or companions and the number that one has. And then also one will thereby have to make engage in many activities so as to be able to care for them, a lot of work or worldly activities. And that will take you away from your true purpose, your actual goal. So rather than being confused by the mind of pride and striving to have servants and companions and being in a prestigious situation like that, rather retreat within yourself. Take your mind within. Cultivate your mind in meditation and strive for the attainment of Buddhahood so that you can be of true benefit to others.
Then 지나빈에 먼저 세버름치에 에 파수 페디가라 세버름치 쉽슈에 여러와 안에 겨울음치에 쉽슈에 여러와 되는 광주기 지금 광주기 신뢰 광주에 냠는 낭토고래 신뢰 판도야 고지도고래 되니게 소수기 냠는 약고 지도야 신뢰 판도 치부여다 되니 구에네 그 코다 요고냐지 냐제 안에 제반에 파도 친구 욕도 그거 빼지 야름 지다고 단 저버름 지다고 다 그래서 니 멤비게다 시하야 판도 제마도 데네 소소에 냠네 시하 제마도 데네 민디구라 계제네 요거 망보냐 데 기루 자 지기루라 망보냐 데네 지네 나게게 안 차바게 차바게 차바게라 니용거디 지겨면 데네 데니기 소소에 냠네 약고 제마도 판도 제침 지통문 티바샤체 네 엠바시 되세 안 냠네 당보 장도시 냠네 제 오래서 던다 딜레 걸마도 아 요거도 거기 내냐 지 말세 딜레 요마데 아디 던다지 하고 걸마도 노래냐
So I'm explaining these quotations from Ramayatisha quite slowly because I think it's important that you understand them well, because just reading the words some misunderstanding is likely to arise. So just furthermore on this, this is no time for having servants and companions. It is a time for living in solitude. So again, this is encouragement to be aware of the danger of pride. Because if one allows oneself to be overcome by pride, then one will generate pride in the number of companions one has around oneself. And if we take in the situation of a teacher, then they would think of their attendants as well as their students. And this, and then great pride can arise. Oh, I have so many students compared to that person, or I have more attendants than others. And this way of thinking is, of course, harmful. And moreover, then this teacher, instead of being able to develop their own inner qualities, they are going to have to focus on more mundane activities so that they can take care of their students and their attendants and the like. And so that would be the case of a teacher, also would be the case of in other situations too. Again, the meaning is guard your mind against pride. However, once one has developed good qualities within oneself, then the situation is very different. Then to have many students and to have attendance is a good thing because the teacher can be of benefit to them. So if you think of the situation of His Holiness or of Lama Zopa, they have many students, they have many attendants. But having students and attendants is not a source of pride for them. It also, caring for them doesn't take them away from their dharma activities, doesn't turn them towards mundane activities, because they've overcome that. They're only engaged in dharma activities. So when one has developed oneself, it's a very different situation. But until one has developed oneself and truly developed good qualities within oneself, be aware of this mind of pride, and it can express itself through the wish to have students, to have people taking care of oneself, and rather guard one's mind against pride, and to do so, rather retreat to solitude and develop qualities within oneself, rather than striving to collect students and attendants.
And the Rani save you to himself. That Loma save you, save yourself, save yourself, Giru Mongo Sayad, Lako Sajin, Giru Mongo Sajin, Giru Mongo Sajin, Sane, the Dinigi Sa, Mongo Giru Mongo Sa, Dine, Sosugi, Yamne Yawachi Matu, and the Shenya, Shetagi, Jig Panto, Chimbuki, Lopchanji Matuce, and Mongura Sa, Sajin, Carson and Adi, Loma Mongoyas and Kor Mongoyas and Dineko, and the G Kor said, Namu Koran, Dizinema, your horse, Eddie, Korongi Shahadan, the Nim Yedigan, your Wadan Kor, that Kor, Benjiru, that is Rua. That is Jed, that Loma Sever said, Ranium Duyon, Nium de Mena, Loma Gazeka, Sosu, Loma Mangu, Sai Shorwa, the Nig Loma Mangu, on the Nichi Sueche, and the Sosugida, Nyomo Dusum Shera, Pangmatuache, the Nil Loma Mangu Sawa, and I got a few young person. Najaki, Nala Giru Mama, Kawadwan and Iluma Mamboyas and Najakiata, Tenigi, and then Lomesanea, and the Buoyada, Tenigi, Yangu Lejawajada, and the Nigungulis, Tenina, 지게 얘네 제대바이나 소수기 최냠래 야고 리고 말 말레바한테 가르쳐그랬잖아 응 세딜에 야고마 제와치메네 니게 계절이 유도야 말와 계절이 나야지 디니온 디바차 제와치마 두아마도 응 말와 디니 인자 안 디니 제바이나 소수기 뇽몽 계게 냥아요레스 제가 디니 인자 안 내갑 디니기 기루디게 로마디게 파 마사와지 소소는 안 한 게 냠는 제약이 듣고 합될 비도 제고를 해야지 예수무도 와
The fourth, I don't know, couplet is similar to the one we've just looked at. This is no time for taking care of disciples. It is a time for taking care of yourself. So the meaning is similar to what we've just looked at before. The difference is that previously we were talking about servants and companions, and this was really about those that are surrounding oneself, that those are one is physically close to, that is, one is with on a daily basis. So that was the previous couplet. Now we're talking on a vaster scale. So here we could really talk about a teacher and students, where students would be spread far and wide. So here again, though, so that's the difference between these two couplets. But the meaning is similar, in that one must be aware of the arisal of pride, because the afflictive minds can arise in ways that deceive us, that we aren't easily aware of them, and we can end up being motivated by wanting to accumulate students and have as many as possible. And we may justify this in many ways, but we have an underlying motivation of, or I get invited to all these places, wherever I go I'm treated so well and there's so many people, and that shows that the afflictive minds are still very present and active. So here again the message is to guard your mind against the arisal of pride, because if one comes under the influence of pride, then one's supposed virtuous activities will not be as successful and as beneficial as they could have been, and the benefit that would come in this life and future lives will be greatly, greatly reduced. The fifth set of two lines are very important. There's a mistake in our English translation, so I'll just read it correctly. This is no time for protecting the words. It is a time for reflecting on the meaning. So I'll read it again. This is no time for protecting the words. It is a time for reflecting on the meaning. The meaning then of this couplet is, of these two lines, is very important. If one hears a lot of teachings or memorizes a number of texts or many verses and leaves it at that, then there is really very limited benefit. Just engaging in the mere recitation or the accumulation of knowledge, this has very limited benefit. It's essential to study, to come to know the meaning, and to apply it to one's own mind, to one's own experience. In other words, one needs to think about what one is studying, reflect on what one is studying, meditate on what one is studying. This is essential. So one needs to hear teachings, read texts, think about that the meaning. How does it apply to oneself? What should, in terms of one's own physical behavior or verbal behavior or mental way of or way of thinking, what should one abandon? What should one adopt? This is essential. And that is the meaning of these two lines. This is not the time for protecting the words. It is a time for reflecting on the meaning. The last set of two lines, these are quite clear. This is no time for being out and about. It is a time for staying in one place. The meaning here is that if one is traveling here and there and getting caught up in a variety of different activities, then this is clearly an obstacle to being able to sit quietly and reflect on the teachings. A very apparent obstacle to our study and our meditation. And therefore, if we do get caught up in a variety of activities, going here and there, doing this and that, then this precious opportunity that we have attained, this will be at worst wasted, or at least we will not achieve what we otherwise could have. So therefore, we need to guard against this.
And 안에 소수기 두분하나 부 다 망고 줘요라. 디지차다 민나 바친 차상게다 지게 림보체다 다 개화 기회 싸와 매도다 빼마도 쇼지야 건출에 푸기 선비기 차상 푸기 매바치 또 진행한 적이 샘데 자야 되다 가지데 니가 제나 소수게다 기회 싸와 소수게 선음 싸스 선음 기회 싸와데 셴레 팬비치데 티기 선지 데니기 제데네 셴라 두 진행 동스 동의 샘바 두 진행 안에 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 두 삼다에 되다 동의 샘바 장화데 장화데 디네 자야리도와 Dini yinzada, dini ki tongwe senpad wu jang hudu, anu jema, anu sosu ki jaya ki gogab tang, dini ki nubayu na, pa tong tugu war, jay tugu, pui tugu war, seda dini za serna di meba charu korwa, seda jaya di re, tanga zi tugu sinne, samar tangye, se mewe tuwa ne, da jaya da dini ngosu puya ki gogab ma jube ne, susu mewe tuwa ne, dini ki puya tang, jimba, jik goncho liya puya, shen liya jimba tangya, tu jen jaya di re sheda. 提供了的讲学生级的经验那什么的那人民给他们当策略他们的样子咱们家的人民给月子他们这样的什么的他们这里面这什么的这些地域用啊什么的一些地域用啊那你看这个浪漫的一些故事人都电波说在人民给我们家的你这些的那这样这个那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那么的那
we'll then finish here for tonight and start from here then next week. So let's just summarize what we looked at tonight. We've been speaking about the practice of the generosity of giving Dharma within the context of the perfection of generosity. As we've said briefly tonight, but also last week, that the practice of generosity is primarily the mind wanting to give. So as this is the primary aspect of the practice of generosity, this is what we should train in. So the practice of generosity doesn't mean going out and giving things to everyone. It means cultivating the strong and heartfelt wish to be of benefit to others, to give whatever we can, to help in whatever way we can. So the way that we can engage in this practice of generosity is to include it in our meditation. So we first start out by generating the motivation of bodhicitta, recalling how all sentient beings without exception have been our mothers to us. And in those rebirths, as well as in other rebirths, they have shown us tremendous kindness and care. And reflecting on all the kindness that we've received directly and indirectly from all sentient beings, the strong wish to repay that kindness will arise within us. And following this strong wish to repay the kindness, we will want all sentient beings to experience only happiness. And thus, this will lead to the meditation on love. And for all sentient beings to experience only happiness, sentient beings have to be free from suffering. And then this will lead us to the strong wish, to the meditation on compassion, giving rise to the strong wish, may all beings be free from suffering. And then we move on to taking responsibility to bring this about, to bring about lasting happiness to all beings, to bring about the elimination of suffering for all beings. So in this way we generate the mind of special intention, taking responsibility to be of benefit to others. Then we continue with the meditation and generate the strong wish to be a skilled guide to others. And to do so, we know we need to attain Buddhahood. So we then make the commitment that for the benefit of others, we will strive for the attainment of Buddhahood. And then in one's meditation, one can engage at this point in the practice of generosity. So one here now visualizes one's body as light. And then this light going out to all sentient beings, starting first with those that we feel closest to, and then progressively through the stages we've mentioned in the past, progressively to all sentient beings. So we visualize giving our body to others in the form of whatever they require. So whether it's sufficient nutritious food, clothing, a comfortable home, whatever it is they require, we generate the strong aspiration, may I be able to fulfill all the needs and wishes of all sentient beings. And we go through all the beings that we know, as well as those that we don't know, such as those in the lower realms. And we send out our body in the form of light rays to others, visualizing that all the suffering of the beings in the hell realms is purified, and they experience good rebirth and bliss and happiness, completely freed of suffering. We can think like this in terms of the beings in the hell realms, the preta realms, the animal realms, imagining that all their needs are fulfilled, and that it's us, ourselves, directly fulfilling all their needs. And then furthermore, in this visualization, not only do we visualize fulfilling all the temporary needs of sentient beings, but we also generate the strong aspiration that may we fulfill all the ultimate needs of sentient beings. In other words, may we give the Dharma to others. May we share all the inner qualities that we have, whether they are now just in seed form or the more powerful inner qualities that we do all individually have. May I give these all to others. And the Dharma knowledge and the Dharma understanding and the cultivation of the Dharma that I have done now, I give this all to others so that they too can experience happiness and experience separation from suffering. So this is how we can engage in meditation in the act of giving. And furthermore, in our meditation we can engage in a mandala practice. And we visualize this pure land that is the mandala, and we visualize that all sentient beings, those that are within our body right now, that we have this close connection with in this life, as well as those around us that we know and those around us that we don't know, all sentient beings, may they come to live in a pure land. And we offer this pure land then to all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas and our teachers, and that merit that we've accumulated from generating this strong aspiration for others to experience only happiness and benefit, we then offer to others. So in this way, we give all the virtue that we've accumulated here, we give to others. And we dedicate it for them, for their attainment of, and their fulfillment of all their temporary wishes, as well as the lasting wish, the ultimate wish of meeting the Dharma, coming under the care of a spiritual friend, and engaging, having a wish to engage in the Dharma practice, and successfully doing so, achieving all the minds of the Mahayana Dharma, and attaining enlightenment. So in this way, we can engage in the practice of generosity in our meditation. So this is clearly separate from actual physical giving, and that's dependent, of course, on what our own physical situation or material situation is. But this meditation is something that we all can do. In this way, we give Dharma to others. And furthermore, when we come to dedicate this practice, not only should we dedicate this virtue to all sentient beings, but we should dedicate it to our spiritual teachers. Because it's independent on our teachers and all sentient beings, it's the independence on their kindness that we have been able to engage in this meditation. It's our teachers who have taught us how to do this, it's sentient beings who are our objects of practice, and it's therefore due to all of them that this virtue has been accumulated. So therefore this virtue is really their virtue, and we offer it to them. And we offer it so that our teachers abide in this world and continue to do so, and that all beings come under their gentle care. So this is how we can all engage in the practice of generosity, and a further benefit that will come from doing this is that when we arise from our meditation, due to having generated such a strong and determined aspiration, when during the course of our daily activities we have the opportunity to be of benefit to others, we'll spontaneously take that opportunity, we'll engage with others with an open heart, and we'll help others wherever we can, and we'll ensure we don't harm others in any way. So that too will be a benefit that comes from engaging in this meditation on generosity. So we'll continue then from the middle page 237 next week, continuing with the first perfection, that of generosity. So I apologize, we've gone a bit over time, so we won't take any questions tonight, and we'll end here. So thank you very much. Oh,
Thank you.